This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor. Jeff Mellor.
Happy Saturday, and welcome aboard, White Sox fans. And I say that understanding that I may actually be welcoming some new White Sox aboard the bandwagon because of the way they have played, specifically in the month of May. And after wrapping up a fantastic homestand last week, the last time we convened here on White Sox Weekly, which we do every Saturday 2 hours prior to the pregame that day. Pregame coming your way at 2:30 officially with a 3:05 first pitch as the White Sox will play game two in Philadelphia later today. But yes, every Saturday, White Sox Weekly here for your pleasure, 312-332-3776. That's the number if you want to jump aboard and talk some White Sox with me. Have a fantastic show prepared for you today. Dan Plesac, who is on the call on CHSN, will be joining me at 2 o'clock today. We'll pick his brain. I love Stoney, but I also love when we get Dan Plesac calling the White Sox because he has a unique perspective, works for MLB Network as well, so he gets to watch the entire league. He's got the 40,000-foot view of everything that's going on. Then he gets to come in and call some White Sox games during the year for CHSN when Stoney takes a much well-earned break from time to time. And so it's a good mix to listen to Dan Plesac on the CHSN broadcast. And I love having him on, inviting him on to join us here on White Sox Weekly just to kind of, you know, pick his brain, see how he's feeling about the Sox and where they compare to the rest of the league as well. So he's going to join us at 2 o'clock. Chris Getz met the media on the start of this current road trip in Minnesota on Monday. We're going to play that for you around 1 o'clock today. And then Davis Martin joined Waddle and Sylvie on the flagship station ESPN Chicago earlier in the week as well. And of course, Davis Martin is so thoughtful and always an interesting listen. So we're going to play that back for you as well, probably around 1:30 today. So lots of good stuff for you here on White Sox Weekly. As I mentioned, last week when we convened on White Sox Weekly, talked a lot about Munetaka Murakami, who had earlier in the day been placed on the injured list with the hamstring injury, the grade 2 hamstring strain that he suffered last Friday night, legging out a double play, beating out a double play against the Tigers, but then having to be removed from that game. Of course, that, I will remind you, was Miguel Vargas's epic walk-off home run in extra innings against the Tigers. And so we were basking in the glory of that, but also it was somewhat bittersweet because we had just gotten the news that Munetaka Murakami was going to miss an extended period of time for the White Sox. And also we were on Jacob Gonzalez watch because the rookie was en route trying to get to the ballpark, Wrigley Field, last week as he flew in from Charlotte Saturday morning. He got to the ballpark in time for the start of the game, but didn't have an opportunity really to get into it. Will Venable doing a nice job of just kind of letting him soak in that first day, especially considering the travel that he had gone through when he got to make his debut on Sunday, where he collected his first hit. And you know what? I'm running through the games. Why don't I give you some of the highlights from the past week? That's fun too. We can always do that. So I go back briefly here to Saturday. So the White Sox were coming off of that walk-off win with Miguel Vargas on Friday night, and they still had the Tigers in town at Wrigley Field. And the biggest moment of last Saturday's game, the White Sox had a 2-1 lead, and Will Venable, after Anthony Kay had gotten through five innings in 84 pitches, in the sixth turned to Grant Taylor after a couple of runners reached base on Kay, one via the error. And Grant Taylor, really, this was the biggest moment in that game last week. He comes in with two runners on, nobody out, and the White Sox have a one-run lead. And for anybody who is clamoring for Grant Taylor to be the White Sox capital C closer, This is exactly why you don't necessarily want him to do that.
0-2, foul tip, strike three. That's the first out. The pitch. And swinging a pop fly out into right center. Nishida and Grichik are there. Nishida will cut in front and make the catch. Two down, the 0-2. Called strike three. On a fastball, we've got a challenge.
Challenging the call of strike.
Harris thought it was inside, and it is a ball. So the inning is not over yet.
Ball is overturned.
0-1-2. A swing and a ground ball to Meidroth. He's got it. He lobs to first. That'll do it.
What a job by Grant Taylor coming in and quashing that effort by Detroit.
No doubt about it. That was the biggest moment in the game last Saturday. Grant Taylor escaping that jam for Anthony Kay. Will Venable would let him go the next inning as well. That day, Taylor went two innings and struck out four in dominant fashion, did not allow a hit, did not allow a walk, and it was the biggest moment. But another big part of that game happened in the seventh inning. With that 2-1 lead, the White Sox added on.
A lot of those A pitchers in your bullpen. Swinging a high fly ball, deep right field. It's back. It's gone. Montgomery makes it 5-1. Pitch. A swing and a blast to right. That baby will go. Benintendi, a two-run shot. It's 7-1.
Funnily enough, you heard at the start of the first home run there by Colson Montgomery, Len Casper referring to the A arms in your bullpen, right? And what's interesting to me is that the point I wanted to make was with those two home runs, with those add-on runs for the White Sox in a 2-1 lead, they were able to avoid using Brian Hudson that day. I mentioned it on the postgame show. This is the difference a lot of times that sometimes goes under the radar for good baseball teams. You need to, when you have those leads, add on at points during the season to give yourself a little bit more comfortable of a lead so that you don't necessarily have to use every single A arm out of the pen that day. And because the White Sox were able to add on those five runs in the seventh and eighth inning, Will Venable did not have to use Brian Hudson last Saturday. And so a 7-1 victory, the White Sox had won two of the first three from the Tigers, and all of a sudden they were thinking about the possibility of picking up a sweep against the Tigers. Now the Tigers jumped out to a 1-0 lead on Sunday afternoon against the Sox off of Sean Burke, who actually pitched really well, but only was able to go 5 1/3 against the Tigers because they did a good job of raising up his pitch count last time he went to the mound. And so the White Sox had to rely heavily on their bullpen. But keep in mind, they had exhausted Grant Taylor the day before, and they also used Sir Anthony Dominguez in that win, but they did not have to use Brian Hudson. And that proved to be critical because he was available when they needed him on Sunday. They got the early lead, thanks in part to Colson Montgomery picking up a home run and Tristan Peters driving in the go-ahead run for the White Sox. Eventually, though, they turned to Brian Hudson late in that game, and he was able to give them an inning and a third when, again, Taylor Dominguez not available for the White Sox, but Hudson was. He's clearly been the third most trusted arm. I guess I could probably make the argument, honestly, he might be the second most trusted arm after Grant Taylor these days in the White Sox pen. But nevertheless, because Hudson was available and not used the night before, the White Sox were able to pick up that sweep against the Tigers before hitting the road trip in Minnesota on Monday, which began not in the best of fashion, of course, because you're probably familiar with the fact that the White Sox definitely did not have a great start to the series, as the Minnesota Twins definitely got to David Sandlin the second time around. The rookie was making his second career start after his brilliance against the Twins the first time around, and the Twins were definitely looking for revenge, and they did a good job of jumping all over Sandlin in the fourth. They got him for four runs after they also picked up one in the first. At that point, the White Sox were just doing their best to make it a game. And that's something that they have really showed is in their DNA this season. And of course, if it's going to start with anybody, it's usually going to start with the guy who I believe is the emotional heartbeat of this team, Miguel Vargas.
Vargas smokes one high and deep left center. Larnach back at the fence, and it's into that bullpen. A two-run blow, and it's 5-3.
Andrew Benintendi would add to that.
The 3-2 is hammered to right. Wade back there. It's gone. They've gone back-to-back, and it's a one-run game. Andrew Benintendi.
So the White Sox had pulled it back to a one-run deficit. Unfortunately, in the fifth, the Twins added four more to the tally, and they jumped out to a 9-4 lead. Ultimately, Miguel Vargas, though, continues to have what I think is an all-star caliber season.
The 0-2 to Vargas. And he clubs one deep left field. It is gone. A line shot home run. He's hit two tonight. They're not done yet. It's 9-6 all of a sudden.
Have a night, Miguel Vargas.
Seems like we're saying that every night, doesn't it? As Vargas hit his 14th and 15th home runs of the season against the Twins in the second game of that series. White Sox did lose, or I'm sorry, that was actually the first game of the series. I'm getting ahead of myself. White Sox did lose 9-6. And in the second game of the series, you felt pretty good because Davis Martin was on the mound, and he's been the White Sox stopper all season long. Probably had his worst outing of the year. Wasn't necessarily his sharpest, Davis Martin. And the defense definitely let him down as well on Tuesday night. The White Sox were not the crisp team that we've kind of gotten used to. I think the most encouraging sign that we can take away from Tuesday night's loss to the Twins, a 6-4 final, was Luis Angel Acuña finally being able to do what he does best, and that is create chaos on the base paths.
There's a pitch that's high, and Acuña was on the move, and he steals second base. Ball trickled out of the glove of Tristan Gray. But 2-1, Acuña takes off for third. Called strike, and the throw goes into left, and Acuña's going to score. Well, you just saw why he's on this roster. He's got defensive versatility, but he's got game-changing speed, and we haven't seen a lot of it, but he changed this inning, and it's 1-0.
Now, ultimately, it didn't matter on Tuesday night, but that is an encouraging sign for Luis Angel Acuña. And I will point out, he did have probably his hardest hit ball of the year last night, Friday night as well, which we'll play for you here in a minute. But so there's some encouraging things happening. Now, the White Sox had dropped the first two in Minnesota, which meant that on getaway day, they had to do something to salvage it. And the good news is that they did. Taj Bradley, who's been the Twins' either best or second best pitcher all season long, he got into a jam early, and it was somewhat self-inflicted, which allowed the White Sox to get on the board in the first.
It's low. He walked him. Mydroth will get an RBI. He's got a 16-game on-base streak. Antonacci will score, and it's 1-0.
And then we had an opportunity to see Jacob Gonzalez. After a couple of games, he had recorded his first big league hit on his big league debut. Then he finally had an opportunity to drive in a couple of runs when he came to the dish with the bases loaded.
And he singles out into left center. Here comes Vargas. Benintendi right behind him. First two career RBIs for Jacob Gonzalez, and it's 3-0.
White Sox would add one more in the first to make it 4-0, and they never looked back. They would actually end up watching Eric Fetty have a really nice performance on Wednesday afternoon. He actually retired the first 11 hitters that he faced, the first 11 Twins, before they broke up the no-no that he had going. Or I guess he walked a hitter to break up the the perfect game. Then he carried the no-hitter into the fifth inning when the Twins finally picked up a couple of hits to break up the no-no for Fetty. But Fetty ends up going five on 61 efficient pitches, and he gets his first win in 20 starts. So that was good to see for Eric Fetty to finally get on the board. And more importantly, the White Sox to salvage the series against the Twins. And they finally had an off day, their first in 13 days. The White Sox wrapped up their longest stretch of consecutive games this year without an off day. And so that is good to have in the rearview mirror. And they had an off day on Thursday, and that set the stage for the opener last night in Philadelphia. And this is going to be a theme for me throughout the show, is the schedule that the White Sox have, the upcoming schedule, the next four series. It is a gauntlet, and it starts with the Phillies, who, once they fired Rob Thompson and named Don Mattingly their interim manager, they have been one of the best teams in all of baseball. I believe they're 24-10 under Mattingly. So clearly they needed something to light a fire under them, and the firing of Rob Thompson has done it for the Phillies, and they were problematic for the White Sox last night. Anthony Kay, who generally hasn't had an issue with lefties for the most part, he was spotted a 2-0 lead, but it was a lefty who actually got the party started for the Phillies last night.
A swing and a drive, well hit out into deep right center. And it's a two-run homer to tie the game for Brandon Marsh. Mentioned he hits lefties pretty good, but that is his first home run against a southpaw on the year. And this is the opposite of a shutdown inning that the White Sox pitchers keep records of. But he's got to get his focus back.
Trey Turner would add an RBI single. Alec Bohm would also have an RBI double in that same inning. And so the Phillies put five on the White Sox in the bottom of the second last night, which meant that the White Sox would have to go to work. And they did. Randall Grichuk hitting in the second spot as the DH last night came through.
1-2 pitch hit in the air out into deep left. Marsh back at the wall. Home run. Randall Grichuk. It's 5-3.
And it wasn't just once.
0-2, and there's a swing and another blast out into deep left. That baby will go. 6-4. Grichuk with a two-homer night.
His fifth and sixth of the season. Derek Hill in the starting lineup last night.
There's a drive out into deep left field. Derek Hill goes deep. Fourth home run, all against lefties. And it's a one-run game.
Are you sensing a theme? Will Venable likes his platoon splits, and they have been working effectively this year for said hitters, Grichuk and Derek Hill. Colson Montgomery, who has been in a funk as of late, came through in the top of the seventh last night in an opportunity to bring the White Sox all the way back from a deficit.
The 1-1. There's a swing and a broken bat flare out into right. Base hit. Tie ball game.
Hello.
That's how you snap an offer. You snap your bat. It's 6-6.
Unfortunately, though, the White Sox were not able to hold off the Phillies, as they ended up putting a couple of runs on the board in the seventh off of Brian Hudson, who has been so good this season. Actually, the two earned runs that Hudson allowed upped his ERA to 1.84 on the season. And honestly, you wish the second one didn't come across. Now, the first one, a hell of a play, a great attempt by Sam Antonacci.
Here it comes. Swing and a line shot. Antonacci out in shallow left makes a catch. Here comes Schwarber. He tags the throw to the plate a little late. It was close, but Schwarber got in ahead of the tag by Carroll. And the Phillies lead 7-6.
And if it was just one run, it might have been something you felt like the White Sox could make a late push for. But what was definitely deflating, Sir Anthony Dominguez relieving Brian Hudson with a runner on second and third, trying to get out of the jam. And unfortunately, Dominguez turned to the splitter, which can always be a dangerous pitch with a runner on third.
Dominguez ready to work the pitch. And he bounced one, and it gets away, and it'll cost them a run. Turner scores. It's 8-6 on a wild pitch.
Now, the White Sox did put the first two runners aboard in the top of the eighth, but some unfortunate luck as Riku Nishida came on to pinch hit for Luis Angel Acuña, and unfortunately, he just hit it right at a Phillies defender.
The pitch. A swing and a liner caught by Keller, and they're going to turn a double play. Gonzalez got doubled off second base. What a play by Brad Keller, and that's buzzard luck for Riku Nishida, who hit an absolute rocket.
And that pretty much killed the White Sox rally at that point as they lose the opener in Philadelphia 8-6 to the Phillies. I do have a note regarding the White Sox starting pitcher. Sean Burke going to be the bulk man today. Brandon Eisert will play the role of opener, the lefty who has been solid for the White Sox, and especially in the role as an opener, will start for the White Sox today. It makes sense. Schwarber hits first, Harper hitting third. So you've got the two prodigious lefty power hitters, so you make sure that Eisert faces them in the first inning, which means Sean Burke won't have to face them till hopefully what'll be the third or maybe even fourth inning if things go according to plan for the White Sox. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. Hey, grab your friends and head to the park for Miller Lite baseball and brews. Get one ticket and two beers starting at $24. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. I'll get you the White Sox starting lineup when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sox games on the go, the ESPN Chicago app.
Sox fans, join us at the ballpark Saturday, June 13th, as the White Sox take on the Dodgers at 3:10. 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a Colson Montgomery bobblehead presented by Rate. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. White Sox lineup against the Phillies, and Andrew Painter, the righty today, looks like this. Sam Antonacci in his customary leadoff role, which he has made his own against right-handers. Fresh off of reaching base six times the other day in Minnesota, that was the first time that a White Sox hitter had done that since 2017, when actually a couple of White Sox hitters did it. Adelis Garcia and Yoan Moncada did it in the same game. But Antonacci, in that final game against the Twins, did reach base all six times that he came to the plate, including a hit by pitch. And oh, by the way, he was hit by a pitch again yesterday, which now puts him in the league lead for most times hit by a pitch in all the majors. 13 times Antonacci has been hit by a pitch. That is wild for a player who missed the first 16 games of the season because he hadn't received his major league promotion yet. So Sam Antonacci, absolutely, that is an undeniable skill that he brings to the table. That skill set very valuable in the leadoff spot. He's a 380 on base right now, and even better against right-handed pitching. Miguel Vargas, somebody who I want to talk about, his all-star, what should be, I think, if he continues hitting the way he is, should be his first career all-star appearance at Citizens Bank Park, where the White Sox are playing today. So we'll talk about that later in White Sox Weekly. Andrew Benintendi, who has really been on a heater as of late, supplying some power for the White Sox since Munetaka Murakami hit the DL. Benintendi has three home runs over the last week since Murakami was on the placed on the IL. So he has really been done a nice job of adding that to the White Sox lineup, which is clearly going to be needed in Murakami's absence. Colson Montgomery, I just mentioned his bobblehead. He's hitting cleanup today, playing shortstop. Chase Mydroth hitting fifth and playing second base. Jacob Gonzalez at first base and batting sixth. Tristan Peters continues to be a real revelation for the White Sox and their fan base, with the solid defense that he's playing in center field, but now also becoming a real threat with the stick. He is in center batting seventh. Drew Romo behind the plate, the switch hitting catcher, bats eighth. And then Riku Nishida brings his excellent defense to right field and rounding out the lineup there. Before we take a quick break and let you hear from White Sox general manager Chris Getz, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we will let you hear from Chris Getz and regarding how good a month of May the White Sox had, and maybe, just maybe, what their thoughts can be about being potential buyers at the trade deadline. Has the team put Getz in a position where he's going to go for it? He'll address it all coming up right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The Rich Eisen Show, weekdays, noon to 2, ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Mellor back here on White Sox Weekly. We're a little over 2 hours away from first pitch as the White Sox get set to take on the Phillies in game 2 of their 3-game series. And going to call quick audible here. A little miscommunication on our parts. Thought we were going to have Danny at 2 o'clock Central Time, but no, we're doing 2 o'clock Eastern Time. So anybody listening right now gets some bonus Dan Plesac in their life like I do right now. Danny, how was the opener? I know obviously the results didn't go the way we wanted as White Sox fans, but nevertheless, was it fun watching this White Sox team do what they've done all year and continue to fight even when they fall behind?
Yes, and Citizens Bank Park played like it normally does when it gets hot and humid. Ball was carrying out of this place last night. It's another hot and humid day today. Not as much sun. It's kind of a hazy day near 90 degrees. The flags are blowing out. So I would expect another high-scoring game. Good game last night. Randall Grichuk had a couple of home runs. But I'll tell you what, I give this White Sox team a lot of credit. That's a game yesterday. They jump out to a 2-0 lead. Phillies drop a 5-spot on them in the second. That was a game last year. I think the White Sox would have lost 11 or 12 to 4 or 5. They fought back in, tied it up at 6. And unfortunately, the Phillies scored a couple in the eighth inning, but this White Sox team, they never die.
Yeah, you know, Dan, the truth is baseball is 162 games. Sometimes they're, you know, on the postgame show, I had a couple of callers who were maybe upset with some moves that Will Venable decided to make, which I didn't agree with. But what I will say is sometimes as a manager, there's no buttons to be pushed in a particular game. Sometimes you're just going to run into some bad schedule luck where you run into a team who happens to be hot that night, and there's not much you can do.
No, and one of the things you have to do, the two ways you have to beat the Phillies, you have to win the first inning, contain Schwarber and Harper, they're two big left-handed thumpers, and hope that you can stay away from Duran in the ninth inning. And unfortunately, Schwarber didn't hit for much power last night. He had 4 singles. Harper had a couple of base hits, but you saw Duran was filthy last night in the ninth inning. It's kind of the recipe for the Phillies. There's some swing and miss in their lineup. I know they're going to be a team that's probably going to be active at the trade deadline. Trey Turner's having a down year. Adolis Garcia's starting to swing the bat well right now for the Phillies. But this is a White Sox team. And this series is favorable matchup, pitching matchup-wise. The White Sox were able to duck Christopher Sanchez and Zach Wheeler. They saw the Phillies' third-best pitcher in Lizardo. They're going to get Painter and Aaron Nola back-to-back. So I would assume the next two games the White Sox should score some runs.
No doubt about it. Dan Plesac, who's on the call on CHSN today, along with Connor McKnight, as the White Sox and Phillies are going at it game number 2. You just mentioned the White Sox were lucky in that they don't have to play pitch against Sanchez and Wheeler this series. I'm curious, Dan, because you have the unique perspective. You work for MLB Network, so you're watching the entire league very closely, but then you get to come in and watch this White Sox as well. So what are your thoughts about the White Sox right now in terms of a playoff contender in a down American League at 33-30?
Yeah, I think, you know what? Listen, I think every White Sox fan in the organization would have signed up through 63 games to be 33-30, right?
No doubt.
They came in with this identical record of the Phillies at 33-29 last night. The American League is so jumbled. It's been really a year of disappointments. The Tigers have been a big disappointment. The Royals have been a big disappointment. And up until the last week to 10 days, the Mariners, they've created some space in the West. The Yankees right now are going to be without Aaron Judge for 4 to 6 weeks, so you would have to think the Yankees are going to take a little bit of a step backwards. I think right now, if you could hang around that 500 mark, and we had Chris Getz on MLB Network last week, and Greg Amsinger, the host, asked him, hey, if the White Sox are in a position at the trade deadline, do you think you guys would all entertain being buyers at the deadline? And he said simply, we would do whatever we felt we could do to make the team better and not hurt our long-term prognosis. So as long as this team continues to play well, I don't think there's anybody in the American League that's going to take off and go on a 50-game run that, you know, they go 35-15 and get some separation in the wild card. I think at 100 games that the White Sox can be 4 or 5 games under 500, they're going to find themselves right in the middle of a wild card race because, as you said, the American League has been very down this year.
Dan Plesac, former major leaguer, 3-time All-Star in his career, joining me. He's on the call on CHSN today of White Sox and Phillies, filling in for Steve Stone. Dan, you have been to the Midsummer Classic numerous times in your career, as I just noted there. The White Sox, I think the great thing about, you know, what you can see on this roster right now is that there are plenty of players that you can make a legitimate case are deserving of being All-Stars. You know, Miguel Vargas, he might have an uphill climb simply because, you know, J-Ram and Junior Caminero are going to be probably, you know, hard to get past. So will there be a third baseman on the roster? That's always the question. I'm curious though, Dan, someone like Grant Taylor, who in my opinion, you know, he doesn't have the saves that are piled up from the reliever position, but if you just look at how valuable he is, do you think Grant Taylor has a shot of returning to Philadelphia where you're at today and playing in the All-Star game for the American League?
I don't think without question. Now listen, he's going to have to pitch well the next four or five weeks before the selections are made for the All-Star team. But Taylor's been invaluable to this bullpen. You know, they've used him in a couple of different roles. They'll use him in the 7th inning, 8th inning, and roll him out there in the 9th inning. I think he and Davis Martin has just been, what a revelation he's been from 2025 to 2026. He's established himself as one of the top-tier pitchers in the game. And unless, you know, he has a dreadful next 3 or 4 weeks, I would assume Davis Martin, he's going to find himself as a representative for the All-Star team. And I think Taylor presents a very strong case, too. I think both. If I were to wager right now, I would say that there was out of a doubt that Davis Martin right now would probably be a slam dunk to represent the White Sox.
No doubt about it. Dan Plesac joining me for another couple minutes here on White Sox Weekly as we get you set for White Sox and Phillies. First pitch coming your way at 3:05 Central Time today here on ESPN 1000. All right, Dan, what do you think about what the White Sox are going to have to do here? You get the first leg of this gauntlet that is, you know, they have Philly and then they go home where they get Atlanta, then the Dodgers, and then you mentioned that Aaron Judge is going to miss 4 to 6 weeks, so there's some good fortune for the White Sox. But after the Dodgers series wraps, they go to the Bronx to take on the Yankees. That is a hellacious 4-game series the White Sox have to run through here.
Yeah, it is. But listen, sooner or later, you're going to have to play everybody. You know, the schedule is what it is. When it's, you know, it comes out the off season before, you know, going into it. But I think right now, this White Sox team, this is a vastly improved team from the team it was a year ago, and certainly light years better than they were in 2024. They're no longer the laughing stock of the American League. And I look at last night's game. You know, they fell behind to a really good pitcher in Lizardo last night. They just keep clawing back. And really, if it was an unfortunate line drive that Brad Keller snared off the bat of Yoshida last night, you know, the White Sox might have put together a nice little rally there off of Keller. A soft line drive, hit at his feet, he makes a play, turns a double play. That could have been an entirely different game. Much different team from the White Sox. Is it going to be difficult? Yes. And I think of the stretch of games, you know, just from looking at it from afar, I think the Braves probably present the biggest problems. Their lineup is hitting. They have great starting pitching. And what's not talked enough about the Braves is the back end of their bullpen is filthy. Iglesias has been good. Lee, they have a left-hander that strikes people out, and Suarez pitching the 9th inning. So I think if you're looking at that gauntlet of the schedule, I think the Braves probably present the biggest problem for the White Sox. Plain and simple as this. The White Sox starting pitching, if they can keep them in games, they've shown that they can score some runs. They can play with anybody. I don't have a crystal ball and say, hey, what the next 12 games are going to look like. But I think if the White Sox can get through that 12-game gauntlet, you know, somewhere like 6-6, 7-5, you'd have to consider that a win. And I think it'll give them a lot more confidence as a young team. Listen, if you're aware of it, and I'm aware of what the next 2 weeks stands for as far as who you're playing, the players are aware of that also. But I will say this, this is a vastly different group than it was last year, the first 4 months of the year, and a completely different White Sox team than it was in 2024.
There's no doubt about it. Dan, a couple more real quick here. So Munetaka Murakami, you don't get to see him because he obviously hit the injured list. But prior to that injury that he suffered, the hamstring, I mean, what can you say about what he has brought to the White Sox team and just the, you know, the slug from the left side and also the ability to get on base? I mean, it has been, to your point, I think the entire White Sox team has fed off of what he does as a player.
Yeah, it's hard when you lose a bat. Listen, he was off to such a great start. And I think the thing that surprised me the most about him, a lot of times when you see players come over for Japan, sometimes they can get overwhelmed by the big league fastball. And he certainly looked like he could get to the fastball, power to all fields. You know, they desperately miss him in the lineup. Listen, it's a different team without him in the lineup, but they're just going to have to hold serve till they get him back. And hopefully when he comes back, he's healthy and he can provide the sock that he brought the first 7 weeks of the season. So there's some hope to look forward to. It's not an injury that, you're worried about, hey, is it going to ruin the rest of the season? He'll be back hopefully sooner than later. But they definitely miss his bat in the lineup.
All right, Danny, as I let you go, I'm going to let you pick your poison on the way out here. Do you want to rave about Miguel Vargas and the level that he's gotten to, or do you want to talk about Sam Antonacci and his ability to get hit by pitches and get on base and what he's provided for the White Sox?
I'm going to give you a double dose. I'm going to rave about both. I think what Antonacci brings, he brings an energy. He may run into some outs on the bases. He plays with his hair on fire. I told Connor McKnight last night, he reminds me of a guy that was with the Angels a few years back, Darren Erstad. He plays with his hair on fire. I still think Miguel Vargas is the best hitter. If you're going to look at this White Sox lineup top to bottom, he had a chance last night. He struck out, but he had a terrific at-bat last night.
Yep.
I can't say enough about those two players. I will say this. With Mooney's absence, they're going to need Vargas to step it up, and he's very capable of doing that.
No doubt about it. Dan Plesac has the call on CHSN with Connor McKnight. Danny, we'll be watching. Thanks for joining me today.
You got it. Sounds good. Take care.
You too. Dan Plesac, again, he is on the broadcast this weekend on CHSN as Stoney has the weekend off, so he is stepping in. And like I said, always fun to listen to Dan Plesac, who has a great knowledge of the entire Major League Baseball because he watches it for MLB Network. So always love getting him to jump in for a little series here and there and give us a little bit of what he thinks about the team from afar. Hey, Sox fans, be at Wright Field Friday, June 26th, as the White Sox take on the Royals at 6:40. And then stick around after the game for a post-game concert featuring Marshmello presented by Minute Maid Spiked. Don't miss your chance for an on-field experience. Exclusive on-field passes are on sale now with limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/concert. Jeff Meller here with you on White Sox Weekly. So we had a little bit of a timing issue there. So we're going to kick Chris Getz back to 2 o'clock when we thought we were going to talk with Plesac. So we're going to do Getz at 2 o'clock and we'll still let you hear Davis Martin coming your way at 1:30 as he was on with Waddle and Sylvie here on the flagship station, ESPN Chicago. When we come back, let's take a look at the White Sox players that I think have a genuine argument to be representatives at the Midsummer Classic in Philadelphia later this summer. We'll do that right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The home of the Sox. This is ESPN Chicago.
As we heard earlier today from Dan Plesac, it is always sunny in Philadelphia, or at least it is today. Another hot one expected. Afternoon game in Philly. First pitch, 3:05. Today, game 2 of 3 as the White Sox try and bounce back after losing last night 8-6 to the Phillies. They were trailing. They came all the way back to tie it up before the Phillies scored a couple late to put the game out of reach for the White Sox. And hopefully it will be sunny in Philadelphia for a couple of White Sox players later this summer when the Major League Baseball All-Star Game is going on at Citizens Bank Park, where they celebrate the 250th anniversary of the birth of our nation, and that is why they chose Philadelphia as the site for the All-Star Game this year. All-Star Game will be taking place July, the All-Star weekend. The game is the 14th, July 14th, Tuesday. You've got, of course, the Home Run Derby on the 13th, and then the Futures game, I believe, is on the 12th. So 12th, 13th, and 14th is when they will be doing the All-Star festivities in Philly later this summer. But as I mentioned, I think the White Sox have a legitimate argument for six players to make the American League All-Star team. Now, the reality is that they're not going to get six, because it's always difficult to have a huge number, just because every team has to have at least one representative, which means 15 roster spots. You know, obviously you'll have one of those 15 as a team, but 14 spots are automatically going to other players on other teams. And then you start to get into the roster construction and where will you be aced out. So I wanted to just take a look at who on the White Sox is deserving, at least at this point, of being a All-Star representative later this summer. Now, Munetaka Murakami, clearly, I think at this point would have been there. And I think there's still a chance he could win a vote. You know, don't underestimate a Japanese superstar potentially getting the home fan votes, if you will, from Japan, that is. And if there's still a chance that Murakami could be the first base representative, what could be, obviously the injury is going to put him a little bit behind the eight ball. But I think the fact that he's done enough already where I think there's still a possibility he could sneak his way in on the fan vote. Now, it's probably not likely, but I think, again, there's still a chance. He's got that 938 OPS, which is second among all American League first basemen. Of course, he hit 20 home runs before the calendar turned to June. And his problem winning the vote, honestly, is going to be the fact that Ben Rice is having such a good season for the Yankees. Rice has a 1050 OPS. He's hitting 305 with 18 homers and 45 RBIs. And obviously, as a Yankee, he's going to have a large fan base voting for him pretty frequently. So I think Ben Rice could be the biggest hindrance for Munetaka Murakami. Now, Nick Kurtz also, with his absurd on-base streak, which I believe hit 48 games before it was finally snapped, he of the Athletics is very worthy. He's got a 933 OPS along with 11 home runs, 43 RBIs. So he could be in the mix as well. And Wilson Contreras is having a great season for the Red Sox, although the team is so down, I don't think he'll end up being a huge vote getter in the fan vote off. So it's probably going to be Ben Rice, Nick Kurtz, or Murakami for that first base spot. Chase Meidroth, when you look at all of the second basemen in the American League, Chase Meidroth has been consistent, and he is somebody who, in an underwhelming position, maybe, just maybe, could have a shot if Jose Altuve doesn't just have the name recognition where he gets a lot of votes. Travis Bezzana has been off to a nice start for Cleveland, but he's a rookie, so he may not have enough name recognition outside of Cleveland to really have a chance. Other than those three names I just listed, I don't know if anybody else really stands out. Maybe Ernie Clement, off of the big postseason that he had for the Blue Jays, could get a bump. And then there's always, I guess, Jazz Chisholm, who I should mention because he's a Yankee, and they always seem to perform well in the fan voting. I mentioned Miguel Vargas, I think, is performing like an all-star. His uphill battle is the fact that Jose Ramirez is one of the most consistent players in the game. Even though, I will say this, the counting stats look good for Jose Ramirez, but the OPS overall at 768 is not nearly as eye-popping as it's been throughout his career. So maybe, just maybe, J-Ram doesn't get enough votes. The other issue at third base will be Junior Caminero, who does have some really good numbers for the Rays. He's hitting 288 with 14 homers and has a 907 OPS for them. But Miguel Vargas, I think we all know as White Sox fans what he has meant to the team. He's not just a great hitter, as Dan Plesac mentioned a moment ago. He's also, in my opinion, really the emotional leader inside the White Sox clubhouse. At shortstop, I don't think Colson Montgomery is going to have a realistic shot, but I think he's worth mentioning. Bobby Witt will, I would anticipate will win the fan voting at shortstop pretty overwhelmingly. But maybe Colson Montgomery has a shot to sneak in as a backup, although I guess the little bit of a slump that he's had here, he's going to have to probably get on a heater over the next couple of weeks to really make some hay. But when you look at the defensive metrics that Colson Montgomery brings to the table, I think he should be in a realistic conversation for somebody who could be a representative for the White Sox. Now, you know, I'm not even counting Sam Antonacci in my group of six for the White Sox because he doesn't have enough playing time, but I think he's worth at least an honorable mention just because of what he's been able to do in terms of getting on base. And I can't stop raving enough about his ability to get hit by a pitch. I love that move where he'll hang over the plate, and then as he's turning what looks like away from the ball when they come in, he turns away but then leans over the plate. So he actually makes it even more difficult for pitchers to avoid hitting him, which is why I always say it is a true skill that he brings to the table. Finally, I mentioned it. Well, I guess two guys. I think Davis Martin has done more than enough at this point where he probably should be a representative for the White Sox almost no matter what at this point, 8-2 with a sub 2.5 ERA. And then I made my case regarding Grant Taylor to Dan Plesac, which he agreed with. The problem for Grant Taylor could be just a numbers game. Pitchers, especially relievers who don't get saves, always have an uphill battle to get named to the All-Star game. It's not impossible. It's one of those things where it can be a tough thing to overcome. So we'll see if Grant Taylor can actually, you know, buck the trend of, you know, relievers who aren't closers actually making an All-Star team. Hey, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark Wednesday, June 10th for Pride at the Park. Show your pride as the White Sox take on the Atlanta Braves at 6:40. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. Jeff Meller here with you on White Sox Weekly. I mentioned Davis Martin there a moment ago. He joined Waddle and Sylvie here on our flagship station, ESPN Chicago, earlier in the week. Fantastic interview, as Davis Martin usually is. Find out what professional football team he is a diehard fan of, if you're not already aware. He touched on that, along with why he's been so successful this season. We'll let you hear from the White Sox ace coming up next, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
It's simple. The ESPN Chicago app.
Jeff Meller hanging out with you here on White Sox Weekly as we get set for the White Sox in Philly. Getting set for a 2:30 pregame show, 3:05 first pitch coming your way. Hey, join us at the ballpark this Friday, June 12th, as the White Sox take on the Dodgers at 6:40. 10,000 fans in attendance will receive a Homies Big Head figure presented by Beggar's Pizza. Be sure to stay after for a postgame fireworks show as well. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. All right, so if you missed it earlier this week, Davis Martin, the White Sox ace, joined Waddle and Sylvie here on our flagship station, ESPN Chicago, and talked about a lot of different things, and they began by asking Davis, with where the White Sox are at right now, if they had told him, hey, you'd be this good during spring training, would he have actually believed it?
It's hard not to say no, but I mean, I think this is what we thought was in the realm of possibilities. You know, I think if we second half of last year, we thought we'd get the right guys in and we get the right, you know, culture set in place, like this would be a place that where we could go and where we could be. And I think that's just a testament to the hard work and our continued, you know, preparation and, you know, not settling. We're loving competing. We're loving, you know, coming to the yard every day and having fun with the guys.
Davis, what would you say is the biggest reason why the culture has changed and changed for the good for sure?
I think it's bringing the right guys in. I think once you have the right guys in place, you know, you have the right manager in place, kind of everything falls into place per se. I think everybody knows their roles. I think once the culture is set, there's no more like, well, how do we change this? How do we change that? It's just like, here's the expectation. Here's your job. Do your job to the best of your ability. If you do your job and all 26 guys do their job, we're going to be in a good spot.
And everyone has brought this up, Davis, that you haven't been here long. You got called up in 22, but yet you're the longest tenured member of the White Sox. So when the narrative is going around, hey, the end of that last run, the clubhouse wasn't great and this is a 180, would you say that, yes, that is true, that there's a huge difference between this team and the team that when you first came up and started contributing to was?
Yes, 1,000%. I mean, it's a night and day difference. I think it's, you know, I think it's something where the collective group, I feel like we're going in the right direction. And I think, like I said, I think the overhaul at the end of 2022, that just shows you how fast the game of baseball happens. You know, that I'm the longest tenured guy. If you would have told me that in 2022 with guys like TA and Dylan Cease on the roster, I would have been very confused. But, you know, that's the life of baseball and that's our profession.
And then, Davis, not to throw anybody under the bus, but like, what is the biggest difference with that? I know Waddle asked you just like about how the culture changed, but like, what's the major difference? You said 1,000% and you acted quickly on that between that team and what you guys are doing currently.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just everybody's pulling in the right direction. I think we have a good group of guys. I think you have a bunch of guys that have played together from coming through the system. I mean, I think we've had 11 debuts this year. So I think you kind of have that vitality coming up through the ranks, guys that have played together, know how each other, you know, respond to each other in certain situations in the minor leagues. And then you get to the big leagues. And I think once that culture is set, you know, everybody can come in and be themselves and just rock and roll versus, you know, having to do something different. You know, guys can come in, be themselves, have the right attitude. And as long as they're ready to go by game time, you know, I think that's all we ask of them, you know, and I think that's what all 26 guys come into the park knowing what they need to do to be ready at 6:40 to go.
Yeah, you know, in sports, we always ask the age-old question, how do you learn how to win, especially with young teams? Is it as simple as you learn how to win by winning, or is there a different key to finding a way to win more than you lose?
Yeah, I think it's a process-oriented approach, right? You know, I think 2024 it is what it was. Like, you know, you lost a lot. You found out ways how to lose games. And I think 2025, you kind of start putting yourself in positions to win games. And obviously, I think we still struggled with run games, you know, whether that be offensively, defensively, pitching staff, somewhere where it went wrong. And so I think you kind of slowly learn and learn and learn over a course of 162 of last year. You know, towards the end of the year, we feel like we're putting ourselves in the positions to win games. We're putting ourselves in positions to like close out games, you know, and I think we took that into spring training where we didn't want to treat it as, you know, we're just here to practice and kind of get the flow of the game. It's like, no, we need to learn how to win games. We need to learn how to execute at a high level because of the X, Y, and Z happened in 2025. So we're starting to learn from our mistakes in 2025. And now, you know, I think we're putting ourselves in positions to win and then we're just capitalizing on mistakes. And, you know, guys are making great plays when you need them to make great plays. You know, guys are hitting home runs. We need to hit home runs. And I think once that happens, that belief starts growing and growing and growing that you're really never out of the game.
How about you specifically? What's been the key to your dominance this year?
I mean, I think, you know, I talk about a lot about my faith. Like, I think just, you know, I understand that God has a plan for me. And I think that has helped me with just the fear of failure. And I think I'm able to go out there, relax, compete, and have fun. And secondary to that, I think it's the team, right? I think the team has so much fun. You see our dugout. You see the guys that are in our dugout and the types of personalities that are there. You know, it's hard to be uptight. It's hard to be, you know, anxious about anything because, you know, everybody's having so much fun. And you know that if you don't get the job done, someone behind you is going to pick you up. And, I talk about the San Francisco outing, you know, not my cleanest, but we go score 9 runs. And I like went up to every spot in our locker room and I said, hey, thanks for picking me up. And that's what our team does. We pick each other up. And that's been the greatest thing is realizing that it's not just you going out there by yourself. You have 26 guys that are all going with the same goal.
Davis Martin joining us. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. I've heard Jeff Meller does a pregame explain this. I've heard Lennon DJ explain this about you, that you've become even more of a thinking man's pitcher. That you've got great stuff, but now you're making adjustments within the game when you see the way they're trying to hit you. Can you take us through that? And is that an accurate way to sum it up?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think you just learn so much as you go. I tell everybody, I think you're ignorant if you think you have it all figured out. So, I mean, my goals have been constantly to learn and it from anybody and anyone who I can. And I think, you know, a lot of this stems from Martin Perez last year at the end of 2025. Like I say, the process oriented, right? Every outing could be good, could be bad, but you always have something to learn from each outing. And, you know, I think watching Martin throw, you know, I asked him, I was like, you watch scouting reports? And he's just like, no, watch this. Just watch me pitch. You don't have to just watch me pitch. And so, you know, I'm watching him go out there at 88, 89, you know, just carving guys up left and right. and you start seeing the process in which he's thinking of, how he's setting guys up, how he's putting pitches in certain situations to get to the pitch that he wants to get to, you know. And so I would just sit there on the iPad and just rewatch his innings over and over and over again and start trying to implement those into my outings.
That's amazing. That's a great story. Let's talk more about you, too, and your past and how you got here. We've read some stuff about you, and Meller tells us, big football guy. You're a Texas guy. That on days you're not pitching, you've got a football in your hand, and you're throwing around the football. Take us through your football background.
Yeah, so, I mean, born and bred in Texas. So, I mean, football was part of my life till from about 5-6 years old, playing flag football out to – you know, being in West Texas, it's Friday Night Lights. So, you know, you grow up doing that, played against Odessa Permian and all those teams growing up. And, but yeah, I played middle linebacker on varsity my sophomore through my senior year. Probably wasn't the craziest linebacker. I'd like to think of myself more cerebral. But the same situation. I loved how, you know, offenses tried to get to a certain position and how could we align ourselves to be in the best position to counter that, you know, whether that's a 5-man front, a 4-man front, a 3-man front, whether that be, you know, I think it was just kind of like that chess game, you know, that it's so much fun. It's very similar to like pitching, right? You're trying to set guys up, you're trying to get one step ahead, and that's the same thing with defense. So, yeah, love football. My older brother's a defensive coordinator down in Port Aransas. So, football's in our blood, and yeah, I love it.
Did you cross paths with Patrick Mahomes at Texas Tech?
Yes, he was a year older than me. So he quit baseball the summer that I got there.
Good decision on his behalf, huh?
Worked out real well for him. Everybody was proud of him.
Did you get to know him at all, though?
Yeah. I mean, we had, you know, obviously, like, you know, like football and just athletics in general in college, you know, you're at the same eating facility, you're at the same, you know, student center where you're doing homework and all that stuff. So you cross paths all the time. You know, I remember him always talking about like, take it easy on my Kansas City Royals. And so, yeah, no, it's been good. And obviously I'm super proud of him for what he's done for the brand of Texas Tech. And obviously he's a generational quarterback and he's awesome, dude.
So I was surprised, a linebacker too. I thought spit out the quarterback stuff. Yeah. And then, so when, does it help as a pitcher on off days to throw the football? We see this more and more from other pitchers. Is there something that's connected? I've got a kid who pitches. He's 10, Davis. Help me out here. Should he be throwing a football on off days?
Okay. I mean, I don't know how deep or how big you want this, but basically, like, I mean, you have weighted balls, you have certain things, right? And so basically you can't throw, I mean, Josh Allen throws a football, what, 74 miles an hour if he's absolutely spinning the thing. And so it's very, very hard to throw a football very, very hard. And so for us, it's a great way, an alternative to plyo balls. So it's basically a heavier ball, but you can't throw it very hard. So it's a good way to loosen your shoulder up. It's a good way to get low intensity volume on your non-throw days. Like for day one for me, my arm's super sore. The last thing I want to do is pick up a baseball, but I still want to move those muscles around, get that shoulder going. And so for me, I like to start with the football and stay there and just kind of, you know, 40, 50 throws, kind of loosen everything up. The next day, get ready to roll and kind of freshens the arm up. But yeah, you can't throw it hard. So that kind of gives your arm a reprieve, but you still get to move some of those muscles.
Well, being from Texas, we won't hold it against you if you're a Cowboys fan or a Texans fan, but have you developed an appreciation for our Chicago Bears after the season they had this past year?
You know, guys, I mean, don't berate me too hard. I'm actually a Philadelphia Eagles fan.
Really? What? In Texas?
Wow. Yeah, surprise, surprise.
So explain.
So my mom's an only child. Granddad was born and bred in Philadelphia. So her whole family's from Pennsylvania. So when, you know, they moved down to be next to us, have grandparents close by, he actually bought a ranch out in West Texas. And despite my Cowboys dad, he named the ranch Eagle Ranch. So that is still in our family. And so my father is working on hanging out at Eagle Ranch every day as a Cowboys fan. So, but yeah, my granddad is got me a Donovan McNabb jersey in the third grade. Wow. And I was just like, I'm in Brian Westbrook, David Akers, Brian Dawkins. I mean, who else? Jeremiah Trotter. Who else do you want? I mean, that was a great Eagles team to get into. Had some dark years there for a little bit, but yeah, we're in a good spot. But yeah, I mean, the Bears are great, dude. What they're doing, Caleb Williams, you know, Colson Loveland's going to have a great year this year. Their defense is phenomenal. Luther Burden coming out of nowhere. I mean, it's going to be, yeah, it's exciting to watch.
Yeah, and this you lead me perfectly into this because I was going to ask you about dreams. The Bears are playing the Eagles, I want to say, like, right at the end of September, early October, but hopefully you guys are busy doing stuff, postseason stuff. Do you allow yourself to dream about that? And what about individually, Davis? Like, if I say Davis Martin, Cy Young, like, do you allow yourself to go there?
No, not really. You know, I talk about it all the time. I'm like, you know, if that's God's plan for me, that's God's plan for me. If he's got something else for me, he's got something else for me. You know, I just, that's the last thing on my mind. You know, we have so much games to play, so many starts to have. You're just focused on today. How can we get better? How can we beat the Twins today? And then, you know, go to the next one and go to the next one. And when you pick your head up, you know, hopefully you're in a good spot. But, you know, I think everyone talks about, you know, football wise going and winning a Super Bowl. But, you know, if you're not focused on weeks 1 through 17, you're not going to be in a good spot.
I think 11 guys have made their major league debuts for your team this year. Is it like a frat party in there with all the young guys?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 29 and I feel like I need a walker around some of these guys, maybe like my handicap space. But yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun. Like I said, the vitality, the energy that those guys bring, and the fact that the culture is set, I feel like they don't have to do too much thinking. They just come in, they play the best of their ability, the game that they've played their whole lives, and everything kind of falls into place.
What was your expectation for what you guys would get out of Mune when he joined the team?
I mean, dude, I mean, you watch BP the first day he hit and you know exactly what was going to happen. I mean, the way he swings, I mean, and I think, like I tell everyone, his work ethic is better than anyone I've ever seen. I mean, he is very rarely in his locker. He's always doing something. He's either in the weight room, he's in the training room, he's doing mobility, he's in the tubs. He's, you know, he's doing everything right. He's checking every box imaginable. And that kind of sets the tone of, okay, well, if he's doing that, everybody else needs to be doing that. You know, if our guy that's getting paid $17 million this year is busting it down to first, we need to be busting it down to first. And that's the thing, is like, you have these younger guys looking at Mune going like, okay, that's how it's done. That's how it's supposed to happen as a hitter. And so, again, he's been great. He's a great leader. You know, even after the injury, he's still verbally talking to everybody. He's bringing energy every day. He's doing everything he needs to do to get back. But he's still very much a part of our day-to-day.
All right, I'm going to ask you a curveball here. Are there bidet rules? So, like, it was publicized that you guys got the bidet because of Mune. Is it just for him, or do you guys partake in bidet use?
See, I thought we didn't really know. That was a fun topic of conversation at spring training. We didn't know if there was going to be like a throne room where it's like, hey, this is the one, and then like you have to like cue yourself up like it's a Spotify playlist. And we're like, I don't know how this is going to work. So then we get there, and then it was like, okay, we got four. All the normal stalls, everybody's got their, you know, it's just a normal bathroom. Here we go. We're good to go. So no, Mune does not have his personalized. I'm sure he has one of the stalls that he prefers more than others, but no, it is a team effort.
That is great. Take us inside that clubhouse, Davis. Like, we're just starting to learn all these young guys. Like Waddle was just telling us who's like the guy there. Who's the guy who we could, if we would walk into a White Sox clubhouse, we'd be like, oh, that guy's fun, or he's a great teammate.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think it's Mike Vassell. You know, he's Tommy John. It's funny because he's not even playing. So he's currently going through Tommy John. And Tommy John is a very hard injury for anybody. You know, you're missing 14, 15 months of your career, regardless of how fast or slow you want it to go. But you talk about a guy who, like, even going through an injury, like, he is bringing energy every day. He's making guys laugh. He's constantly trying to bring guys together in different ways. And yeah, I mean, he is definitely the focal point and the energy of the dugout and the clubhouse.
And he's got the Harry Potter wand. Is that right? Did he order that on Amazon?
I don't know. We don't ask questions of what or why. I mean, he was in a full baseball uniform the other day and he just says it works. And so we're just like, all right, if it works, it works. We don't care. So yeah, I mean, we got the wand, we got the bat. I don't know if we're going to get a wizard staff at some point. I don't know who really knows, but that's the thing about Mike. He keeps everybody on their toes. And that's exactly what you need over a course of 162 is when you never know what Mike's going to bring in the clubhouse.
It sounds like your manager lets everybody be who they are.
100%.
A lot of players would say, hey, this Cubs Sox rivalry and the series is just for the fans. If you were to be honest, do you guys get a little more jump in your step over the rivalry?
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be honest, that was the first, I mean, I'm the longest tenured player, and that was the first White Sox-Cubs series I got to throw in. which is kind of crazy to think about. But, you know, that was probably the most exciting, exhilarating game series that I think I've ever been a part of in my professional career. You know, not being in a playoff game, I can't imagine, like, if it's something like that, that's what I expect it to be like. So that's kind of energy that the fans and the city brought, and I feel like that's what both teams brought as well. So it was a lot of fun. It was a big series, and I feel like it was very much a you know, every inning, every out, every run counts, and it's just high level baseball.
Fun stuff there from Davis Martin as he joined Waddle and Sylvie here on our flagship station, ESPN Chicago, earlier in the week. Hey, Sox fans, take advantage of savings all summer long with our summer savings section. Score select lower level tickets starting at $20 on weekdays and $25 on weekends. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. Jeff Mella here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, a very well-known superstar pushes back on the idea of analytics in baseball. I'll share that with you coming up next on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The legendary AM 1000, the home of the Chicago White Sox.
Hey, White Sox fans, take your game day to the next level with our premium seating areas, all-inclusive dining, in-seat service, and preferred parking included. For more information, visit whitesox.com/premium or call or text 312-674-1000. Jeff Mellor back here on White Sox Weekly. We are going to let you hear from Chris Getz at the top of the hour, 2 o'clock. But I did want to bring this to you because Manny Machado, who has been really reeling this season, in fact, the San Diego Padres' three best hitters, Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Jackson Merrill, have all struggled immensely this year. Despite that, the Padres actually have been playing about as good as you can expect when your biggest run producers are all reeling. Well, Machado has been trying to find a way to fix his slow start. I think and unfortunately, he has come under fire, and a lot of people are citing some newer metrics that Manny Machado may not be completely up to date on.
I just wish we can get the analytics out the way. I think there's too many stats out there, too many stats, way too many numbers. I don't even know half of the stuff that goes up there. I look at the board sometimes and I'm like, man, I even asked some of the guys, like, what is WCCVBB, whatever it is? Like, what are these names that are being created? You know, I mean, it's just crazy to even keep up with.
Weighted expected on base percentage?
Is it? Is that what it is? Yeah, what is that?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's crazy, dude. I mean, the pitching stuff, like FIP or something like that, I think, right?
Fielding independent pitching.
Yeah, like what is that?
That's taking out the defense to say this guy.
All right, so why would you have that stat?
Isn't baseball how much of a stud a guy really is?
Yeah, but it takes a team to win a ball game, and not just one person. One person could be that guy. Right? So one person could carry a team, but this is a team sport. You don't win a championship by just one player. It takes a whole village to do it. So why are we creating these stats for? You know, I think that's the problem with baseball right now.
So honestly, here's the problem is that ultimately, it's been a long time since baseball has been this popular. I think what Machado he's lashing out about people who are saying, hey man, he's frustrated. He's not as productive as he normally is. He's been one of the most consistent players over the last decade in baseball. He's also at age 33, potentially hitting a point in his career where he's reaching the decline phase. You know, that's just the reality of aging. And so I think that might be the realization that Machado is also dealing with. When he doesn't have to take or understand weighted on base percentage. It's not really important for him to understand fielder independent pitching, which I could break it down pretty easily for you and say, hey, what is FIP? Hey, can your pitcher strike hitters out? He can, then he's probably good. And if his ERA is high, it's probably going to come down. Can your pitcher who has a low ERA strike out hitters? No, he can't. Well, guess what? His ERA is probably going to go up soon because a lot of the analytics you're using are more predictive of the basic stats. I think that's the gist of it that I like to get back to. And I know a lot of it, I don't want to have everybody who's listening to me feel like they're in, you know, their junior year of high school trigonometry class. This is not pre-calculus. And I think sometimes you can go so deep into stats that it does turn a lot of people off, a lot of diehard baseball fans who are like, man, come on. I understand on-base percentage. I get Moneyball. I don't, though, understand why we should just dismiss runs batted in. And I think it's a fair conversation. I think, though, when Machado just lashes out because he's struggling and people probably inside his organization aren't doing a good enough job of helping him figure it out, I think he's lashing out at the analytics community. Like, let's stop, you know, painting with a broad brush. If there's something you don't like, if there's a stat that you don't think is a good representative of baseball, let's pinpoint it. Let's talk about it. And part of what he's saying is, hey, yeah, if I got a good defense behind a pitcher, then maybe his ERA actually is more reflective of the team's success. And there's some legitimate truth to that. We can have conversations about it. So I think he's right in some aspects of it, but I think the message he's putting out there, it's too negative, and it's just shutting people down because you may not understand. And again, no, you don't necessarily have to. Guess what? Manny Machado can hit a baseball and is a better player than 99.9% of the people who are relaying this information to him. They're just trying to help him out. So I found it fascinating to watch that. Maybe if we have more time, I'll get into a little more of that later on. Maybe next week I'll bring it back as well. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, though, if you missed it, Chris Getz met with the media at the start of the road trip, and a lot of interesting things, lots of stuff about the White Sox and the upcoming draft in which they have the first overall pick. We'll let you hear from the White Sox president, vice president of baseball operations, coming up right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino. What, you know what? I was about to do it. Let's pause 10 seconds before we throw it to break. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Just keeping all you board ops on the affiliates on your toes. I know you love me for that. We'll take a quick timeout, and when we come back, we will let you hear from Chris Getz right here on the ESP 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Get weird with Waddle's World on ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly as we get you set for White Sox and Phillies' second of three games at Citizens Bank Park. Coming your way, first pitch at 3:05 today. The White Sox went 18-10 in the month of May. That was the second best record in the American League behind only the Tampa Bay Rays, who went 18-8. That is the most wins during a month for the White Sox since 2021, when they won 19 games en route to a playoff berth that season. The Sox ranked amongst the American League leaders in home runs. They hit 42. That was the most, tied for the most this past month in May. Their runs per game, they were second at 5.2, second in OPS. That's something we will teach what Manny Machado, what that means. That's 763. That is on base plus slugging percentage. And their batting average was fourth in all of baseball in the month of May at 252. Chris Getz started out when he met the media this past Monday, reflecting on what a good month it was for the White Sox.
Yeah, it was a quality month. I think I'll start with, you know, just the last week, the homestand, with Minnesota and Detroit. You know, it was two great series. We've been able to stack a handful of those throughout the month of May. And, yeah, testament to, you know, the players stepping up and you know, they enjoy playing with each other. They play to win. Clearly, even the games that were maybe even out of it or certainly down, they just don't give in. So to see them respond the way that they have is great, and to get the support from our fans like we have is really cool to see. They're really embracing, you know, the energy that they bring and just the joy that they have in a winning style of baseball.
How do you kind of go about sustaining the role of losing someone like Murakami for a little while?
Well, it's an opportunity for Jacob Gonzalez, who's been doing very well. We're not expecting him to be Mune by any sense, but he's going to be helpful. These guys, they believe that they can win any night, and that's pretty much throughout the roster. I think it's become, you know, something that's believed throughout the organization too. So, you know, injuries are part of this game. You look around, you know, our division or just the league. There's some teams that have been hit harder than us. and this is just part of navigating a major league season. You've got to overcome some adversity, and we're faced with it a little bit right now. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we're not going to continue and go out there and play good baseball, because we're capable of doing that. And, you know, once again, an opportunity for Jacob and others to step up.
Will mentioned Mooney getting a PRP injection. I'm not medically advanced enough to know if that's just normal for a grade two, or is that specific to kind of what he's dealing with, or what is
it? It's normal, you know, with hamstring injuries, it's pretty common practice. But to go into the science on why it may work, you probably need to ask someone else.
You guys obviously saw something in Miguel Vargas when you made the trade for him a couple of years ago. Is it safe to say that at this point, you know, the player's work stands for itself, and he's maybe even outstripped some of the expectations? I mean, he's playing some really inspired baseball.
He just continues to get better year in, year out. You know, we were confident that he was going to take another step forward from last year, and he's done that. You know, there were glimpses of it last year, you know, that month, 6-week period that he was one of the top hitters in baseball, so we knew it was in there. He just continued to gain confidence and took it into this year. And, you know, not only offensively, you know, he first of all, he puts together such a good at-bat, and, you know, there's been a lot of damage in there, but defensively he continues to improve and work. And, you know, he loves to play. His instincts for the game are so strong. And, you know, obviously there were qualities and ingredients that we felt were in there when we acquired him. And then you put on top of that just the acumen and the work ethic. And, you know, it's really aligned for him, and he's been a great player for us this year.
Seeing it's one thing, like you mentioned last year. Is there anything you credit in particular for his ability to sustain what he's doing right now?
Well, I mean, it's certainly sticky. I mean, if you look at, you know, the consistency that he's brought to the table this year, you know, to credit something or someone, I think, is unfair, other than crediting Miguel Vargas, you know, just because of, you know, what he's been able to accomplish. So, you know, someone that makes elite decisions at the plate, he's really dialed in a swing that works for him. You know, he's gotten a little bit more selective and been able to drive the baseball, and he's getting results because of that.
Where are you at in your draft process, and what has it been like knowing you pick first and set the whole tone for your thing?
Yeah, we're still out there, and you know, we're scouting, and you know, there's more than just the first pick. Obviously, you've got 20 picks and non-drafted free agents that are part of a draft, and. You know, we feel we've got a pretty good sense of where things are and getting organized, and we'll get together in person shortly to start preparing for the draft. You know, Mike Shirley leads the charge there, and he's done a really good job, and the staff and the support group has been outstanding. We've got a lot of people going out and seeing players from front office to our scouting department, and, you know, we look forward to getting there. It's an exciting time for the White Sox, not only because of what we've been able to accomplish so far, but get a chance to add, you know, that level of talent with the first pick is something that you don't always get to do, and we're looking forward to being able to do that.
Does the NCAA tournament weigh any more heavily in scouting, or are there just more games on to scout a player?
Yeah, I mean, it really is. You know, it is more data, and it usually is against better competition. So, you know, those are things that can be factored in. You're mindful of how much weight you put into, you know, maybe a short window or a smaller sample size of performance. But it is a stage. I mean, it you know, teams that you know, get towards the College World Series or in the College World Series, it's fun to watch. Now we've seen players absolutely go on a tear and do great things that, you know, maybe have inflated the draft status of a player, and then all of a sudden maybe it hasn't played out in their minor league journey or major league career. So but it is just another opportunity to continue to watch these guys perform at a higher level. And so we'll be watching, we'll be in person, and certainly able to watch these games, because a lot of them are televised now.
How much value or what do you try to get out of your own in-person looks? Because obviously, especially 1-1 is a big pick for the franchise. You want to be on it, but also you pay a lot of people to do this and have a process. Like, how do you kind of weigh in your own observations with, you know, obviously a very big effort across the organization?
Yeah, I like to just get an understanding of who the person is. And so if there's a chance to sit down and talk with the player, or get to know, you know, their family, their coaches, their support staff, I really value that, because, you know, it's, for one, a very big investment for an organization, and it gets a lot of attention. And so you want to make sure the quality of the person is right with, you know, being associated to the talent that they have. So I would say that that's one of the biggest reasons why I go out and try to see the top talent. Now, in terms of, you know, my evaluations, I think it can be a factor from time to time, but, you know, the process isn't really about one evaluation or even two evaluations. I mean, there's, you know, projection systems and scouting reports. So, you know, yeah, it still goes back to, I want to understand, you know, what we're getting, not only from a talent standpoint, but from a person standpoint.
I guess when it comes to the prospect himself, whether it's at one or later on in the draft, you're going to have an estimated time to the big leagues for particular players. Does the current state of the team, or even the labor thing that's going on here in the next little bit, do either one of those things play into what you prefer in terms of a player's proximity to the major league play?
No, it doesn't factor in. It doesn't. You know, we're looking to find the best players that we can, and they come in different shapes and sizes and timelines, and it's really about adding talent to this organization and, you know, finding value, really, and that value can be used in a lot of different ways. Obviously, you know, when they get to the big leagues and produce, but also, you know, on a trade market, you know, there's prospect capital is real. So, you know, it's we're looking for players that we feel like are going to boost our system.
Do you draft them when it's the draft mass, this first round draft pick? Well, do you go for the person who's less fit? Do you go for the person who has the most talent? When it's 1-1, you know, it's obviously a unique situation. So how do you kind of pull all that equation together when you're kind of going through this whole process?
Yeah, you just focus on the talent. And, you know, I think some of the traps could be focused, you know, you're looking at your major league club and you're trying to fill a need, and that is a trap that we want to avoid. And so, you know, we've done a great job, bringing in up the middle talent, you know, whether it be shortstop, second base. You know, we've got players that, you know, we've got Jacob Gonzalez up here playing first base. We've got Sam Antonacci playing left field. So, you know, fundamentally, that's something that we have prioritized, and we'll continue to do that. You know, I look at the San Diego Padres, and, you know, you look at pretty much across their diamond in the outfield, and you've got prior shortstops. And so, you know, it can provide a lot of flexibility. You know, oftentimes your major league club can be really athletic, both run, defend, and obviously hit as well with that up the middle talent. So now that doesn't mean that if there's an outfielder or a pitcher or catcher that you don't take that talent, but in this case we're focused on getting the best player that we can.
You, if the team remains competitive, how aggressive do you expect to be at the trade deadline?
You know, we're always looking for opportunities to improve our roster. You know, we've handled it that way since, you know, the beginning. And, you know, a deal might come together, you know, later today or near the deadline. You know, you look at the talent that we've brought up this year, and we still have talent in the minor league system as well, at AAA and AA. There's going to be opportunities to bring up those guys and get what we feel like is a real boost, because these other guys have boosted this as well. So, you know, we'll continue to monitor the trade market. This team's playing good baseball, and, you know, we're staying in it, and these guys believe in themselves. We believe in them. And so any way that we can continue to fuel this team somehow, some way, we're going to look to do that.
You've said a lot that it's not all about 2026, but obviously chances to contend are precious. Is there anything? I feel like we could ask you 10 different ways, has this changed because you guys are good right now, but, like, is there any kind of the process or thinking or even, like, promotions where you have to think more in terms of, like, can this guy make us better right now rather than give him a runway? Are there processes that kind of all get adjusted a little bit given the results and where you are
in
the standings?
Yeah, I mean, we are focused on 2026, and I know I have stated that it's not about 2026, but this team is playing really good baseball, and you know we know where we at, where we are in the standings, both within the division and wild card, and you know we're monitoring it, and if there's opportunities to add to this, you know we have higher hopes than just 2026 because we want to have a continual winner here, but if there's chances to really add to this group, we're going to do that.
You mentioned Jacob earlier, but whether it's Jacob or Sandlin or Ritu recently, just what does it say about the work that's played well and the level that you get these guys ready and have them
really
be able to play?
I'm glad you asked that because Chad Pinder, Paul Janish, Pat Leland, Guillermo Quiroz, Jason Nix, we feel really good about our minor league managers, and I know that there, you know, obviously there's hitting coaches and pitching coaches and rovers and field coordinator, and they're all, you know, a big part of the development of the player. But I really want to highlight our managers because I think those guys have done a really outstanding job. And you know, I know I talked to Paul on the way here, and who had just talked to Chad about some of the players on that roster and where they're at with their development, and we trust the group that we have. And you know, rightly so, because guys have continued to get better and performed at the major league level, and it doesn't always, you know, translate right away at the major league level. So I credit them because a lot of these guys have done well right out of the gate. We don't expect that to happen all the time, but we're in a really good spot with guys transitioning. So, you know, we feel like our development system and process, it might be the best that it's been in a while.
I guess how does this situation kind of affect someone like Braden, who, you know, if you call him right now and said we're going to play him every day, developmentally that would seem fine, but like from where you are in a contention standpoint, do you want him kind of ready to be able to contribute right away, or are you having him play center field so that like that's kind of an option? Like, is it a little different than if, you know, he was coming up for where the team was in 2025 or 2024?
Right. We're going to prepare him for what he's going to be exposed to here. You know, he has been playing right field and center field, and there'll be times where we ask him to play center field, and then, you know, but we see him getting most of his reps in the corner and right field. So, you know, I think there will be a time that he comes up here and helps his club, but right now we just want to make sure that he's doing everything he can to be prepared for when that time comes.
Sandlin, you know, he came up here for Noah's already throwing bullpens. Obviously, you know, your options are kind of there, but does he have a chance to kind of stake a claim and show, like, kind of stay up here with if his, you know, contributions stay with?
Yeah, he definitely does. You know, his first start was outstanding. We don't expect him to do that every outing. I don't think that's realistic, but to give us as many quality starts as he can, you know, is certainly welcomed. And yeah, he definitely has a chance to stay here.
Going back to Mooney, do you expect it, like the 4-6 range, is it expected to be a little bit on a lighter side, or at least that the optimism at this point?
I don't know. I always opt to be, I guess, optimistic and choose to be in nature. It's so early on with his recovery. You don't want to get ahead of yourself. You know, it's the first time that we've experienced an injury with Mooney too, and everyone kind of heals differently. And so, you know, I think it's important not to rush to any conclusions just because, you know, we don't know how he's going to recover.
What impressed you the most about Davis's consistency?
He just continues to do it. I quality start after quality start, and you know, I'm just really impressed with what he's been able to accomplish. And you know, you rewind back to, you know, his minor league journey and how he got called up to the big leagues and the major league starter that he's become. It's been a joy to watch it unfold, and you know, he's become a top starter in the major leagues, and obviously our best starter this year. So credit to him, and you know, hopefully we can just support him to keep him going.
That was Chris Getz meeting with the media earlier this week at the start of the White Sox current road trip. White Sox and Phillies coming your way, 2:30 pregame show. We'll get you set for that with a 3:05 first pitch when we come back right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Carmen and Yurko, weekdays, 9 to noon, ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Mellor wrapping up your White Sox weekly edition for June 6, 2026. Hey, Sox fans, make your favorite White Sox players all-stars. When you vote five times, you'll get 40% off tickets. Cast your 2026 Konami eBaseball Major League Baseball All-Star ballot daily or visit MLB.com/vote. Terms and conditions apply. Want to say thank you to Dan Plesac, who hopped on with me. He's calling the game on CHSN this afternoon with Connor McKnight. But of course, if you can't watch, why would you? When you can listen. Got the game coming your way. Pre-game starts in about 4 minutes from right now. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.